Today we have a very honored guest with us who in his Twitter bio introduces himself as a privileged Israeli Jew living at the belly of the apartheid beast. Demand equality no less. We join on the line this morning by Rani Barkin, who joins us all the way from the Middle East, from Israel, Palestine, joining us on the line. Rani, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Why is the 50th anniversary of Israel's occupation of Palestine so important to commemorate?
So we have to remember that today, indeed, marks 50 years to the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem. It is not only nothing that Israel did 50 years ago is new. It is actually only the second part of the occupation of Palestine that started at the very existence of the state of Israel. Its very inception was done at the expense of and on top of the land of Palestine and the expense of the indigenous people of Palestine. So whatever happened in 1948, when Israel was founded, was basically implemented later, perfected and implemented later in 1967, and then, since then, we have the longest running military occupation in modern time, which is the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. And this is what we mark today, the second part of the occupation of Palestine.
Yes, as you indicate, the longest running occupation. Now, from your particular point of view, a very unique point of view, you're fighting for Palestinians' rights in Israel.
Exactly.
And what has brought you to this particular position?
So as I hinted in the first part, basically, since Israel is established at the expense of the indigenous people of the land, there is a whole system here that is put in place since its very inception that is meant to give privileges to people of my ethnic background and take the basic rights from the others who are the sons and daughters of the land. So in this situation, as many of your listeners know, there isn't really a middle path here. Either I support this system of oppression that is deeply supremacist and racist, or I oppose it. I mean, these are the two options that I'm left with. So obviously, acknowledging this horrible system of oppression, then I am vehemently opposed to what Israel stands for and this this system of oppression that neatly falls under the legal definition of the crime of apartheid, and therefore I oppose it and stand by the very legitimate rights of the Palestinian people.
You are famous for, if you
come from within as a privileged Israeli Jew, then you know that kind of gives me another. It gives me a little different voice because I am coming from among the privileged, but I am obviously standing by the rights of those who are underprivileged and subjugated under Israeli oppression.
Yes, and you know, from your particular point, as you say, the position that you've taken will obviously have its consequences considering the context of the country that you live in. And one of the aspects in that regard is the fact that you are famous for refusing to serve in the Israeli army. Explain to us, how has this affected your life and the path that you've chosen?
So every Israeli child, and when we say Israeli, this is an exclusive society, so when we say Israeli, we only mean those who are among the privileged group, Israeli Jews. We are being trained from kindergarten to be soldiers. We are being indoctrinated and told that basically in order to be a good Israeli, in order to be an Israeli at all, to be worthy of those privileges, you have to be a soldier. And there is very little room for any other type of thinking. Certainly, basically anyone who chooses to refrain from military service, to refuse military service, is regarded as some sort of a parasite or even traitor in this society. So it's very uncommon to publicly oppose military service. And those who do publicly oppose, who do choose to become conscientious objectors, are being treated as some sort of traitors. So it does take quite a bit of going against the grain and in order to refuse military service, and this is what I did, and this is what other handful of other conscientious objectors do. So it's not about the numbers. We don't have a large movement of people, but I think that it is still important that there are those who publicly refuse military service. There are, at the same time, quite a few who refuse for other reasons, and that is what we call gray objection. Those who refuse for very different reasons to participate in that system, but those who publicly refuse, who say, you know, that Israel is oppressing in really brutal ways Palestinians via its military, via its legal system, via pretty much everything that it does since its very inception, then, you know, we say, at the very least, I am not willing to participate in that machinery, in that brutal system of oppression via the Israeli army. That is, you know, like the bare minimum, and I obviously refuse to do that.
Now, how are you viewed by your fellow Jewish, citizens in Israel? Are you castigated? Are you targeted by them? Are you outcast in some way?
So I would say that anyone who basically stands for Palestinian rights, anyone who is even even the term leftists in Israel is regarded as is used as in a derogatory way, or the discourse of human rights is used as a derogatory term. So basically, anyone who stands for by Palestinians in one way or another is being looked down at or really being regarded as someone who is going against, not only going against the system, but going against the very people, kind of, taking myself away from the clan. So yes, this is the way that people who refuse to serve in the army are treated in Israel. I'm happy to say that around the world the situation is changing, and there is more and more support for those who are publicly refusing military service, those who are publicly standing for Palestinian rights, and this is extremely important that even though within Israel, Israeli society is very, there isn't much room for thought that is going against the very supremacist nature of the state, the very oppressive nature of the state. Around the world, we see more and more people standing by Palestinian rights, and basically I would say that the BDS campaign, the Boycott the Palestinian Sanctions campaign that started 10 years ago, has become by now a global awareness movement that is really inspiring and is actually managing to change the situation on the ground here in Israel-Palestine.
Yes, you speak about the BDS movement and the impact it has had, but beyond that, how much can really be done to change the status quo, to see Palestinians move freely without harassment and oppression?
I believe that BDS is changing everything about what is happening here in Israel-Palestine, because basically, if the oppression started 7 decades ago during the foundation of the state of Israel, and very little has been changing for the first 6 decades, everything is changing in the past decade since the BDS campaign started. The whole perception of Israel is changing. You know, 10 years ago, people around the world would still talk about Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East, even though it's not a democracy, never was a democracy, not even to begin with. It is vehemently opposed to everything that is Israel is vehemently opposed to democratic values, to values of equality and multiculturalism and the rights of minorities and so on. And everything is changing in the past decade. People are no longer speaking about Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East, but even public figures, even John Kerry in the White House, for example, was behind closed doors was referring to Israel as an apartheid state. And as we know, very recently, there was a very important UN report by Richard Falk and Tilley, who clearly and squarely blamed Israel for practicing the crime of apartheid as defined in international law. And not only that, they clearly claim that Israel is practicing apartheid, but actually they say that it practices apartheid throughout its territory, throughout the territory under its control and beyond. Because we have to remember that a large part of Palestinians, about half of Palestinians, are actually living outside of Palestine. They are in forced exile since the very existence of the state, when Israel was founded at the expense of the indigenous people and by driving them away from their land. And they also suffer the consequences of Israeli apartheid. So we have to remember that.
Yes, certainly that needs to be kept in mind. But we commend you for your stance that you have taken. It's really remarkable, unprecedented bravery on your side, and continue with the great work that you are doing. And we hope that it will all come to fruition. One day we will see the results of the sacrifice. Ronnie, thank you very much for your time on Radio Islam.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
Have a good day.
That is Ronnie Barkin speaking to us from Israel, and he's, as he has titled in his Twitter bio, a privileged Israeli Jew living at the belly of the apartheid beast, demanding quality and no less. And you really can admire people who are willing to make sacrifice for a cause that may not necessarily be directly linked to them. So the Palestinian like Marwan Barghouti makes sacrifice, he says, sacrificing for his people. But someone like this who puts himself in a situation where he's being castigated, when he's being targeted by fellow Jews, where he becomes victim of harassment and all of that, simply because of standing up for what he deems to be justice, then that is really remarkable.